From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made on January 15th, when a local woman learned she'd finally be able to access her original birth certificate. Kara DiManuele is one of the untold number of adoptees born in New York who, until earlier this month, faced barriers in accessing their original birth certificates. Adoptees like her didn't know where she was born, how much she weighed, and perhaps most importantly, who her birth parents are. She says she's always had abandonment issues. And she told WXXI Morning Edition host Beth Adams, quote, "I've sort of wandered around figuring out where do I belong? Who do I belong to?" End quote. Many adoptees are calling the day the legislation went into effect monumental. But some say the law doesn't go far enough. It only applies to people 18 and older, and not to genealogists or historians who may be doing family research or helping adoptees find their birth parents. This hour, we're joined by local adoptees who share their stories, and we hear from a lawyer who offers her perspective on the legislation. A lot to talk about this hour. I'd like to welcome my guests. Beth Adams is here, the host of Morning Edition. You've heard her on WXXI News, my colleague. Welcome, Beth.
Hi, Megan. Thanks for having me.
Excellent reporting. Thank you so much for delving into this issue. I know you got a lot of feedback about it.
So. Yeah, I was surprised by the number of people I did hear from.
Mm-hmm. We can talk about that in a couple of minutes and some of the other things that Beth learned throughout her reporting process. Also joining us in studio, Jenny Thomas. She's an adoptee who runs the Rochester Adoptee Support Group. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Andy Thompson is here. She's an adoptee living in Rochester. Welcome to you, Andy.
Thank you so much.
A little later in the hour, we'll be joined by Kathy Sweat. She's an attorney and the Downstate Coordinator for New York State Adoptee Equality. She has many thoughts about the legislation, and she holds the perspective that it doesn't go far enough. So we'll hear what she has to say a little later in the hour. But first, I'd like to start with you, Beth. Again, excellent reporting. And you and I worked together to try to find some people, find some adoptees to talk to who would be willing to share their perspectives. And I think you were flooded with some feedback and flooded with people who wanted to share their stories.
There were really strong feelings about this with all the adoptees that I spoke to. And I spoke to, I think, five or six people, but we had many more responses than that. And it was really interesting. I'm not shocked or surprised that people feel strongly about this. And some of the people I spoke to said they were really in search of discovering and perhaps reconnecting with a part of their identity. I was really touched by what this meant to them.
I think it's easy for people like myself who are not adopted to just assume that your birth certificate is there and accessible and available. And that was not the case in New York and still isn't the case in many circumstances for adoptees. What did the law say before this new legislation was passed, Beth?
The law that went into effect in the 1930s was put into place to essentially protect the birth parents who were giving children up for adoption. And the prevailing attitude at that time was that the privacy of the birth parents should be protected. And I think if you go back into the 1930s and 40s and 50s, even 60s, let's say if you have an instance where a young woman, a college student or a high school student were to get pregnant, that was really shrouded in secrecy. And I think that's where these laws stem from. And the law stated that you would get a your original birth certificate would be sealed. You would never be able to see that. You got an amended birth certificate when you were adopted, which listed the names of your adopted parents. So that original document that all of us who were born, you know, stayed in our birth families, have always had access to and kind of take for granted, folks who've been adopted in New York State and many other states did not have that piece of paper. They didn't know, in some cases, who their birth parents were. They didn't know what their birth weight was or any other identifying factors that are on that document. And it means a great deal to them.
I know you talked to some people who were down in Albany advocating for this legislation, and some of them mentioned the shifting attitudes over the last maybe couple decades regarding unsealing birth certificates. Why do you think attitudes have shifted based on your conversations?
I think it's the mores of the time that it is no longer scandalous to give children up for adoption or wonder about how they came about. I think I don't want to be, you know, giving bad information, but I think a lot of adoptions today are open, or at least you can access information about birth parents, perhaps more easily. I don't know whether that's true or not, but I think there's just this attitude that, and I think thanks to the efforts of a lot of adoptees who've been advocating for this for decades, that they do indeed have a right, as all of us do, to our original birth certificates.
I know you have to go back to your desk and get a lot of work done, so only one more question for you before I let you go, Beth. I know you were particularly touched by Kara's story, and since she was unable to be here today, I'd like just to touch on a few of the things that you thought were powerful. She made some comments that you thought were really relatable in terms of both her work and her personal life. So tell us a little bit about Kara's story.
Kara DeManuel is an actor working in Rochester. She does voice acting and onstage acting, and I think she teaches acting too. So this has been her lifelong career. And she told me she was adopted in Syracuse as an infant, I believe. And she said that she, and I think you said in the intro, she felt sort of untethered, like at a loss walking through life. And she shared with me that she wasn't particularly close with her birth, her adoptive parents. And she always had this sense of wanting to know more about her birth parents, but she was a little bit nervous about what she would find, perhaps, particularly, would she be accepted by them? And she had been telling me about auditioning for roles and how actors are constantly facing rejection or the prospect of rejection. And I said, so it's almost like you've been rehearsing for this moment your whole life. And she said, yeah, that's exactly it. She said, if I were to find the names of my birth parents and they didn't want me, that would be the big no, the big rejection. And it was really heartbreaking. This meant so much to her. And but yet she said she was going to file and apply for her birth certificate. And she said she didn't know if she would open it right away. She wanted to make sure she was in the right frame of mind before she even saw what was written on there, let alone, you know, try to contact her birth parents if they're still around and want to hear from her.
I'm sure it's a very emotional moment, an emotional decision. I know Andy and Jenny can talk about that. They're both nodding. And some of the supports that you can receive as an adoptee who's trying to make those decisions or maybe navigate a reunion. So we'll touch on that this hour. But Beth Adams, excellent reporting. Thank you so much. Where can we find your story?
You can find it at WXXINews.org. And the story was dated back on January 15th.
Perfect. Thanks, Beth.
Thank you, Megan.
Nice to see you. So turning to our guests in the studio now, Jenny and Andy, who are both adopted, when we talk about the emotional part of this process, either applying for your birth certificate or I know, Jenny, that you've reached out to your birth parents, and actually so have you, Andy. I want to touch on each of your stories. We'll start with you, Jenny. What was the most emotional part of hearing about this legislation for you?
First of all, it was very surreal. Because I know that so many people wanted to know that didn't get the opportunity. So it was very bittersweet because I know that there were people who left this earth wanting this information and they weren't able to get it. And rejoicing in the fact that we finally have the right to see a document that is really taken for granted by most people. And so again, that word monumental, then it was a very monumental day.
Mm-hmm. Andy, how about you when you heard the news?
excuse me. I have to echo what Jenny was saying. It really was truly a surreal moment for me. I personally had already known who my birth parents were because of DNA testing, but to be able to apply for that document and have it in black and white validated me as a person. It made me feel like I actually existed. Whereas before, basically, adoptees have a document that states false information. These people that are listed on a birth certificate are not the people who truly gave birth to you or are part of your DNA, your history. So again, it's very surreal, but very exciting. I mean, the moment I hit enter after entering my payment information, I cried because it's that first step.
If you were sitting in a room with people who are not adopted, and as someone who is not, I can speak to, I will never understand how you feel or what your experience is. What's something that you want to convey to non-adoptees about how it feels to grow up being adopted. You both have much respect for your adoptive parents, and this is not about, or maybe you don't, I'm sorry, Andy. Situations are complicated, but, you know, this is about just who you are and how you feel. So what would you want to tell a group of people who are not adopted about what it's like growing up adopted?
It's, I call the walking question mark, because you don't have that pertinent information. And deeper than that, you're not able to look in the face of the people that you were raised with and identify features, personality, characteristics, those things that we typically just take for granted with our own families. It is very empty feeling. Me personally, I grew up with a Jewish mother and a Christian father, and we didn't really have, you know, the teachings on the fundamentals of either one of those belief systems, but it was how I was raised. But that's not my birth identity. So I identified with how I was raised, but I didn't identify with the deeper complexities of who I was. So it was very much mixed emotions. And as time went on, as I got older, it just makes you feel empty and disconnected from people. And you want that connection. Even if you can just look at someone, you want that connection. It wasn't until I had my children that I was able to do that. Mm. But there was still that void of not knowing. Mm-hmm. It's just a void.
Mm-hmm. Andy, I see you nodding.
Yes. Until I was in reunion with my father, my biological father, and I hesitate to use the word biological because he's truly my father. He's the reason I am on this planet. Until I met him face to face, I would look in the mirror and I wouldn't recognize who was looking back at me. I had this sense of disconnectedness with the person looking back at me because the family that I was raised in looked absolutely nothing like me. The personality traits were different. When I would interact with my adoptive family's extended family, I was always kind of looked at, for lack of a better explanation, with side eye because I did not fit in. I basically was the, I don't want to say outcast, but maybe the black sheep of the family because I didn't behave, look, or present myself like anyone else. And when I did meet my biological father, it was that aha moment. And having that connection and not feeling lesser than because I didn't fit in. So for me, it's been a struggle until recently.
I know that your childhood was difficult, complicated. We talked a little off air about that, and this is, of course, things are sensitive. I don't want to ask you to share anything that's uncomfortable for you. But growing up, did you always have the desire to meet your biological parents or find them?
Growing up for me, I had this rescue schema, if you will, where I was always thinking about the day that my mother or my father would rescue me from the family I was raised in. You know, something would go wrong in my life, or, you know, some infraction I was punished for, I would think, I wonder when my mom is going to come and rescue me and save me from this. Mm-hmm. So it was difficult, but that's part of how I coped with it.
When did you start the process of trying to find them?
I initially started the process probably almost 30 years ago, when I was 18 years old. And it wasn't until I actually took a DNA test back in 2016 that I really started putting hard work into it, if you will. So it's been a very long process.
So you took the DNA test, you learned who your mother was, and you attempted to contact her. How did that go?
With the help of what we call a search angel, which is someone who really enjoys genealogy, helped me solve my puzzle of family of origin. And when we discovered who she was, I probably sat on that information for almost a month. I then crafted a handwritten 3-page letter to my biological mother and sent it to her along with pictures of myself as a baby, her grandchildren, essentially my children, and mailed it off, signature required. And I got no response. So I sent a Thanksgiving card, no response. Christmas card, no response. I'm a glutton for punishment, in case you didn't notice this theme here. And continue to try and make contact and sort of put a pin in that avenue, and instead tried contacting my half-siblings, her children, and was able to actually get in touch with two of my half-sisters and met them, I guess you could say, virtually through a social media conversational piece. But that, again, was very surface. It was very superficial, that relationship. So it really didn't go anywhere.
Did the efforts or the reunion with your father go any differently?
Yes, that went completely differently. I'm a breast cancer survivor, so it was just before my first chemo infusion in June of 2018 that I got what's called a first cousin match through a DNA test. And that first cousin reached out, and we began talking, and she basically helped me figure out who my father was. He wasn't ready to make contact initially. He was very reticent in having any sort of conversation initially. His sister, my aunt, on the other hand, said, regardless of what your father wants to do, you are my niece. And to deny you would be to deny any of my other nieces and nephews. So we sat on it for a minute and we talked and established a very beautiful relationship. Then my father called the week after my first chemo infusion. And we talked and talked and talked and talked and talked. And we planned a trip to South Carolina to meet for the first time in October of 2018. And that reunion was magical. To look in the eyes of a man who is half of who I am and see me was the first moment in my life that I truly felt like I was a human being and I existed, because I saw him. And with my aunt, I saw personality traits and quirks and snarky behavior. And I saw my daughter in 40 years. And in my dad, I saw my son in 40 years. And their connection and how the two of them related to each other. I saw that. And it was like coming home for me.
That's powerful. Thank you for sharing your story. I want to reference one thing you told me before we went on the air. You said your father was never told about you, and he felt like he was robbed of the relationship that you could have had. How did that conversation go between the two of you?
He sat down with myself and his only other child. They were not able to have any other children other than my sister. So we sat down, and he told me that he was angry at first, understandably, to not be told that you have another child. But then he said he was sad because he didn't have, at that time, the 47 years with me. So he looked at me and he said, I've only been an arm's length away from your sister her entire life. So we're very close. And I hope that we can have that same exact kind of connection as your sister and I do, because I am your father. That was the acceptance I had been looking for my entire life.
We can end the show right here. No, but we want to hear Jenny's story too, because it's equally as powerful. One last question for you, Andy, before we ask Jenny about her story. If this legislation had been passed decades prior, how do you think your story may have been different, if at all? And maybe that's an unfair question, but you're relieved to see this come about now. You sent me some documents in advance of the show that were non-identifying information, which I'm sure was, you know, you may have mixed emotions on that. But how do you think things would have gone, or how would you have handled them differently if you had access to your birth certificate decades prior?
I'm not quite sure how I would have received it then, because I'm in a different place in my life now. I like to think that, looking back on the person I was, say 20 years ago, that I would have tried to exercise restraint in my 20s. But I think it probably wouldn't have made that much difference, because in 1971, when I was relinquished, women generally didn't list their the father of the child, because that would complicate being able to place a child for adoption. So I think I probably would have not been as far along as I am now because there were no DNA tests. But having said that, it would have probably changed my trajectory in terms of who I am as a person today, because I could recognize who I am, where I am, or where I come from, rather.
Mm-hmm. How long will it take to receive your birth certificate? What's the general anticipated wait time? Do either of you know? I thought I had that in my...
About 30 days.
30 days. Okay. Yeah. Wow. To wait your whole life and then 30 days. Mm-hmm. Andy, thank you
Absolutely.
For sharing your
thank
story.
You.
Turn to Jenny now. Jenny is the founder of the Rochester Adoptee Support Group and has her own story. And I know that you are also seeking your birth certificate. You've met your birth mother, and we'll talk about that. But you said when you were talking to my colleague Beth that you're seeking your birth certificate for a very specific reason, to clarify some information that is a bit confusing about your identity. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, first and foremost, I met my biological mother on a very public platform. So it was on national television that I met my biological mother. And there were some very gray areas in terms of how I was conceived, who I was conceived by, and even my race. So that being said, I want to see the document to see if it lines up with what was told to me. Similar to Andy, I did not form a relationship or a bond with my biological mother. I was not close with my adoptive family either. I was actually in the foster care system, and there was just some real rejection and abandonment issues that I had to deal with growing up, and really didn't conquer them until my 30s. So it takes a long time to overcome those things. And I felt in my mind that once I met my biological mother, it was just going to seal the deal. Like, that was going to be the epitome of my life, and, you know, the fireworks and everything was going to happen. And my life was just going to come together in such a perfect way. And that just wasn't the case. So it was a deep rejection, but it was a bounce back, too, because, like the story that was shared earlier, I feel like I had been rehearsing those moments in other instances in my life that prepared me for that time. Even though it hurt, it was still not that blow that I thought it would be. So, yes, I want the document to see if I'm listed as white or black, because that was in question. I was described as a blonde-haired, blue-eyed girl, and definitely not that.
I can tell our listeners you are not.
No, I'm not. And I love my blonde hair, blue eyed girls.
No,
but I'm just not one of them.
No disrespect.
No disrespect. But that's even a deeper identity question. And race played a big issue with myself and a lot of other adoptees that were relinquished between the 60s and the 80s. Half black babies that that race played a big part in them not being able to keep us or whatever the case was. So, yeah, I want to see the document to see what it says.
Mm-hmm. When you met your mother, that was through the TLC television show Long Lost Family, I believe.
Yes.
How did you get in touch with the show, or did they reach out to you? What brought you to that part of your life, your journey?
It was a time in my life where I was really searching. Like, I had started the search probably 10 years prior, but then I had this surge of wanting to find her really badly because I felt like time was ticking. You know, I was approaching 40. You know, I can imagine she's getting older, and you never know. So I wanted my children to have the opportunity to know that side of their family and that truth. And I saw a pilot episode, and I was online researching, and I came across an email, and I sent the email to someone. And I wasn't contacted until months later, but I never thought that I would be on the show because I had minimal, at best, information. I had pretty much nothing. So it just snowballed from there, and I was on the show.
And how did the reunion go? I know you do a lot of work with navigating reunions or helping people prepare or negotiate their feelings, and we can talk about that, but how did your personal reunion go with your birth mother? Both on and off the air, because, when the cameras turn off, I'm sure things might be a little different.
Right. It was quite awkward. I think that even it kind of showed on the show. I've been told that a lot.
Did you meet her on camera? Did they give you time to talk? They did everything right.
No, they wanted to capture every moment.
Mm-hmm.
It was uncomfortable, and it didn't get any better off camera. I think that just the shame and the guilt of everything was just explosive, and you have to be able to deal with that and be honest. And that wasn't the case, so it just went nowhere. But I knew when it was time to put up the red light,
mm-hmm.
and that's what I did. You have to be empowered in these moments in your life, no matter how hard they are. You have to empower yourself to know when to take 10 steps back.
Is that something that you talk to members of the support group about,
being
empowered? Absolutely. Tell us a little bit about the Rochester Adoptee Support Group.
Started it probably about 5 months ago, so it's fairly new. After appearing on the show, a lot of adoptees reached out to me just to share their own personal story, and I never imagined that that would happen, but it was the beautiful side of it. Being that I didn't make the connection, I was able to connect with so many wonderful adoptees. And, we wanted a place to meet, and a lot of adoptees asked me, was there an adoptee support group? And I hadn't heard of one. I researched, there wasn't one. So I just felt that there needed to be one so that we could come together on, you know, common ground and share our stories and our hurts, our pains and our joys, and work through that stuff.
Where can people find you if they want to join your group?
They can find me on Facebook at Jenny Thomas. They can email me at jennyrthomas75@gmail.com. And I also have a small support group, which is on Facebook. It's called Link Up, where other adoptees are just supporting one another.
Link Up.
Link Up.
We'll link to that on our podcast page in case you're an adoptee and you're listening and you want some support. You want to join a group like the Rochester Adoptee Support Group. Thank you, Jenny.
Thank you.
We have a lot more to talk about, listeners, but we're going to the shortest break in radio. So when we come back, we'll hear more from Andy and Jenny, and we'll hear from Kathy Sweat, who's joining us on the line. She's an attorney and the downstate coordinator for the New York State Adoptee Equality Group, and she has a lot to share regarding her thoughts on the law. So short break, more connections next. Coming up in our second hour on WXXI AM 1370, you'll hear NPR's live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial. If you want to stick with connections, head over to WRUR 88.5 FM or go online for the stream, and you will hear a conversation about updates on the coronavirus with local physicians and researchers. Everything you need to know about the virus, the CDC maintains the risk level is low in the U.S. We'll have more. You're listening to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. We're talking about new legislation that went into effect on January 15th, which allows adoptees born in New York State who are now over the age of 18 to access their original birth certificates. It's been a long time coming for activists who have been pushing for this in Albany. And one of those individuals is Kathy Sweat, who joins us on the line now. She's an attorney and the downstate coordinator for New York State Adoptee Equality. Kathy, thanks for taking the time to be on the program.
Thanks for inviting all of us on.
Go ahead, sorry.
For so long, the focus of the discussion about adoptees has been about reunions, and people who are not adopted are always very curious about reunions, but really the focus should be on the civil rights of adopted people to be treated equally.
Well, I was going to say, I've been following your Twitter posts for a number of years, and you've been very active in this conversation for a long time. And when you heard the news, I know you have some nuanced thoughts about the legislation, but what was your reaction when you first heard the news?
Well, when I heard Joe Lentol speaking from the floor of the assembly, and he apologized to all of us for blocking the bill in his committee for so many years, I knew it would pass, and my heart just melted, because we've been talking to Joe and his key staffer, Kathleen, you know, for years, and for years he wouldn't release the bill from codes. And this year he apologized for that, and he voted yes on the bill. So we finally broke through this year after years, years and years and years of talking to legislators and their staffers.
Mm-hmm. You've mentioned several times, and we talked about this a little earlier, it's so simple for people who have not had to navigate this process to take having a birth certificate for granted or having access to it for granted. And you mentioned it's a basic human right. And on your website, you've listed a number of ways in which someone that might not have access to your birth certificate now may be able to get it fairly easily. Why do you think it's taken so long for this to be possible for adoptees?
It's taken so long because for years, the narrative was dominated by the idea of reunions. And there were legions of birth mothers who would visit legislators and cry about their lost children. And although their stories are sympathetic, I think it almost made the legislators want to protect them from their own offspring by keeping our birth records a secret. Our identities and the identities of our families have been revealed to all of us by DNA testing. So the charade of the sealed records, the gig was up anyway.
But the law does not provide access to the unsealed records for everyone right now, correct, Kathy?
No, it does not. The state of New Jersey stopped sealing records altogether, so you don't have to wait until you're 18 to get your record. And also, in New York, eventually all birth records become part of the historical record and become available to the public, to researchers and nonlineal descendants. Our records remain sealed. I don't want to diminish how historic our access is to them, but they remain sealed. The official policy of the state of New York is that our existence is an embarrassment. We are still not treated equally.
I have a couple questions that might sound ignorant, and I'm sure Andy and Jenny can jump in and help. But why do you think it's the current legislation only unseals records for adoptees who are 18 and older?
Oh, it's very easy to say that because we had a meeting. New York Adopt Equality had a meeting with the main sponsor, David Weprin, and some other adoptee activists. And a birth mother who was speaking on behalf of an adoptive parents group said, all we want to do is change adult access. We don't want to change anything else. And so the sponsor said, since there's not a consensus among the advocates for not sealing the records from the get-go, let's just stick with that. So the birth records are sealed for the protection of adoptive parents. That was the reason it was done in 1936. So the children could bond to their new families, be as if born to their new families, and that people could adopt without fear of anyone interrupting their little new family, their little, judicially created family. And that's the reason for the sealed records. And it was an advocate for an adoptive parents group who advocated in favor of keeping them sealed and just giving us this little exception. So it's not equality.
Mm-hmm. What would make the law completely equal in your eyes, Kathy? What would you like to see changed? And how likely do you think the changes that you'd propose would happen?
For us to be treated equally, our birth certificates would have to be available the same as not adopted people. In other words, they would be available to us throughout our lives. And of course, 8-year-olds don't go to Vital Records to get their birth certificate, but their parents do. So as in New Jersey, your legal parents, your adoptive parents, would be able to access your birth certificate if they felt it was in your best interest. And if you're not adopted, your descendants can get your birth record without proving that you're dead. So that's another way to make us equal. All birth records eventually become public after a century or 125 years. They're trying to make the number larger. But eventually, everyone's birth certificate becomes available to historians, except for the adopted ones.
Mm-hmm. How likely do you think that what happened in New Jersey will happen here? Considering how long it has taken us to get to this point.
To stop sealing records entirely. Another adoptee, Assemblywoman Joyner, introduced a bill which was called the Preserving Family Bonds Act, which would give judges discretion that was appropriate to allow ongoing communications between children who were adopted, and I do mean children, below age 18, and their blood kin who they have ties to. most people think that adoptees have two families, but legally we have one. Our kinship ties to all of our blood kin are terminated by the process of adoption. And an adopted child has no legal rights to see their grandmother or their siblings because that kinship bond has been broken. The governor vetoed this bill despite its unanimous support in both houses. So when you say how likely is it for New York to look at adoption differently, we're still chipping away at these old prejudices, and hopefully moving forward, there'll be more momentum and things will get even better.
Kathy Sweat is an attorney and the downstate coordinator for the New York State Adoptee Equality Group, joining us on the line as we talk about the new legislation that allows adoptees born in New York who are now over the age of 18 or older, to have access to their birth certificates. We have a number of questions coming in from our listeners, so we'll get to those. If you would like to join the conversation, you can call 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can email the program at connections@wxxi.org. And you can find me on Twitter at MMacMedia. Here's a question from a listener named Barb. She says, can children who were adopted from another country like China or Korea also get their original birth certificates? Kathy.
If you were adopted in New York State or in New York City and you apply to vital records, they will give you what information they have in the file. So a lot of individuals who are adopted and born in China, they have been reported to have been abandoned. And there may or may not be information in their adoption file. Whatever is there that would have been on the birth certificate will be provided to them. The state of New York won't keep that a secret anymore. Mm-hmm. So if you were born overseas and adopted in New York State or New York City, you should apply. New York State can use Vital Check, and New York City, there's a mail-in form. There are links on our website. Our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are all NY Adopt Equality.
Mm-hmm. We'll link to that on our podcast page as well.
You'll get what's in the file.
Okay. Thanks, Kathy. Another question from a listener. This came in before the hour even began. We've touched on it a little bit, but this caller would like to know, would the child of a deceased adoptee be able to access the adoptee's birth certificate now?
Yes, ma'am, if they can prove that the adoptee is dead.
Mm-hmm. What does go ahead, Kathy.
If they can obtain the death certificate and submit that with their request.
Mm-hmm. Okay. See, the phone's starting to ring, and again, the number, listeners, 844-295-TALK. I want to turn back to Andy and Jenny for a second. You've navigated so many ways of trying to find information about your birth families between DNA testing, online programs, a television show. Both of you experienced that. And then now this process with the birth certificates. I don't want to ask you a leading question, but it seems like such a burden to try to get access to something that should be, in Kathy's words, a human right. And you're both nodding. I mean, Jenny, tell us about how you feel about that.
Very indifferent. It's a celebratory time to get the birth certificate, but all of the uphill and upheavals that you have to face in order to get it. I mean, I was back in the library looking through microfiche. You know, I was old school, like trying to find a birth announcement. So it's very time consuming. And that's something that I talk to adoptees about a lot. We discuss is how it can almost become obsessive and take over your life because you want to know so bad. There's such a burning desire and a passion to know that it just becomes a priority. And you have to be able to balance it. But it's not right. It's flat out not right.
Mm-hmm. Andy?
I have to agree 100% with what Jenny said. It is daunting at best. And once we do have that simple piece of paper in our hand, the work isn't done for a lot of adoptees. Tracking down who that person is then becomes something akin to trying to find a missing person. There's so many ways a person can essentially hide themselves so they can't be found by their offspring that it just creates even more hurdles. But again, releasing this birth certificate, this pre-adoption certificate, is a big piece in having to, or excuse me, a big piece in eliminating the DNA searches and the microfiche searches in the library and hiring private investigators. It's a huge step.
I think that's so important to communicate, because it may be easy for people listening to say, oh, you have access to your birth certificate now. Now you're going to figure everything out and it's going to be wonderful and you'll have this grand reunion. And that's not the reality of the situation. You go through all of these difficult steps, and then the reunion itself may not be what you wanted. Maybe you don't have a reunion at all. Maybe you reach out and you don't hear back. Maybe someone doesn't want to be reunited. It just, as you said, Andy, it is draining, daunting, and I'm glad that you're communicating that, because I think sometimes pop culture has the tendency to glorify everything and make it look all shiny and wonderful, and that's not the reality.
Yes, and that's one of the things that I really connect with adoptees is kind of unpacking that stuff and, you know, really being able to navigate through those feelings. Because there, here's the information, now there's the next layer and the next layer. And honestly, I've spoken to hundreds of adoptees, and statistically, the reunions, it can be very sketchy. Mm-hmm. So you want to proceed with caution and, you know, really think things through and have a good support system when you do it. That's my advice.
Call the Rochester Adoptee Support Group.
Yes, you can do that.
Guard your heart, essentially, before going into it. Take the rose-colored glasses off and realize that I hesitate to say this. There's a reason the biological parents placed you for adoption, whether it's because of shame, because you don't fit into their narrative of their life, or other reasons. They have their reasons. And you have to approach any kind of reunification with your family of origin in a very delicate and gentle way.
But to reiterate your point from earlier, it's not all about reunions. There are other reasons to access birth certificates.
Absolutely.
And Caleb from Pittsburgh wants to weigh in on that. Go ahead, Caleb.
Hi, I'm an adoptee, and I did find my birth mother in 2010. And the reason that I searched, and my wife and I had talked about it and decided it was worth it to go through an agency and spend a lot of money to do the search. And the reason was because we wanted to have my health history, because we were new parents at the time. And so I agree, this is a great first step. And I did apply to get my original birth certificate, and I think it's going to feel good and sort of rewarding in a way, or satisfying to have it. But I think it's the first step in that. I don't know if Kathy is still on the line or if Andy and Jenny have thoughts on this, but I think, you know, there's been a lot of years working hard to make this milestone happen January 15th. And then the work needs to continue so that people can get their health information. And I think it would be interesting to know how many people have died waiting for it, you know, or I don't know if that's too extreme a way of even saying it, but I've heard that kind of concern is there. And I didn't have anything major to be concerned about, but did find out that I have a history of diabetes, so I could do something about it. So I'm just curious on what people's thoughts are on that.
Okay. Thanks, Caleb. Well, Kathy still is on the line. Oh, go ahead. Who was that?
There's no way to know how many people died waiting for their health history. And I'm really concerned when people propose the idea of some sort of registry for health information for adoptees. Unadopted people don't have the government gathering their health information for them and giving it to them. I never searched for my birth parents. They were very wealthy and were able to use their access to find me a few days after my 18th birthday. I never really got any health history from them, and neither did the siblings who were raised by each of my birth parents. They don't really have health history either. They just sort of took it for granted that everyone was healthy. So no one's entitled to get that, and it's not a very helpful argument in terms of us getting access to our birth certificates.
Go ahead, Andy.
I know, in my case at least, had I known who my biological or family of origin was, I would have at least been aware of cancer on both sides of my family. I've had thyroid as well as breast cancer. I found out that my mother had thyroid cancer at the same exact age I did. And it was right after she gave birth to me. And I was diagnosed right after I gave birth to my first child. And my aunt, she had the same exact kind of breast cancer I did. So there are a number of health issues that had I known my family of origin, I would have been better prepared for.
Mm-hmm. Here's a comment from a listener named Patricia, who is an adoptee. She says, I just connected with some of my biological family on my mother's side last year via Ancestry.com, but I still have no information about my dad. I just ordered my original birth certificate. I have so many thoughts related to being an adoptee. Mostly, I just want to know my history. My adoptive parents are my parents. I have no issues related to being released for adoption. Still, even under the most ideal circumstances, there's always been such a bizarre loneliness and not knowing anything about your biological background, family history, genealogy, and more. No one looks like me. No one sounds like me. There's no innate commonalities. Sadly, my biological mother is deceased, and the family I've connected with had no idea that she had been pregnant or had a child. So we've tried to fill the details, but really don't have much to go on. My story, for what we have figured out, is pretty fascinating. That's from Patricia. So that's an echo to what our guests this hour have been talking about. In Patricia's words, bizarre loneliness or not knowing who you're seeing in the mirror when you're looking. And do you think, oh, go ahead, Jenny.
I hear that from so many adoptees. You know, our stories are universal, and they come in all shapes and forms, from wonderful adoptive families to horrific adoptive stories. So there is no one story for adoptees. This is not about, hate mongering or anything of that nature. But like she said, that's what connects us. We still want to know, not all, but most of us want to know. We want to look in the face of the people that we've come from. Or more information about it. I just feel it's our right to know. It's just our right to know. And it's been denied. And now, you know, we have a big step. We've taken this big step. But yeah, that's essentially what it's about in the end.
Kathy, what's next when it comes to the legal process? Will your group continue to push for more equality?
Absolutely. Not just for adopted adults, but for the kids who are coming up through the system today.
Yeah.
It's sad that in this day and age, adoption is still seen as a child welfare goal. Losing your entire family is not a joyous occasion for the child. There's a new emphasis with the Family First Act, which was in the president's budget, for more services to prevent children being separated from their families. A lot of the states are resistant to move away from the ASFA, Adoption and Safe Families Act, because they got additional funding for each child whose adoption they were able to arrange. So we have a generation of social workers who've been trained that adoption should be the goal.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
The calls I find most heartbreaking since the Real ID came into effect, and now you need an enhanced driver's license to fly domestically, people who did not know they were adopted ordered their birth certificates. And I've gotten calls from people who were rabid with rage to see that one of their deceased parents had been erased from their birth certificate, because unbeknownst to them, they were adopted by a step-parent. and they are rabid with rage. So that entire side of their family is now legal strangers, and they are no longer tied to the paper genealogy that will be available to their deceased parent.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, I want to thank you for joining us and sharing your expertise. We have so much more that we can talk about. I know we're going to continue to follow this issue, and perhaps there will be more progress in the coming months and years. But I also think it's important that we can talk about legislation, but it's not until we hear how it personally affects people, hear the human stories, that we begin to understand it a little better. So I want to thank all of our guests for helping us do that today. Kathy Sweat, attorney and downstate coordinator for New York State Adoptee Equality, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon. Also, Andy Thompson, thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
And Jenny Thomas. You can find her with the Rochester Adoptee Support Group. We'll link to that online. Our thanks to you.
Thank you so much.
And just a reminder to our listeners, if you want to hear Connections next hour, we'll be on WRUR 88.5 FM. You can also find us on the WRUR website for streaming. If you want to stick with AM, you will hear the Senate impeachment trial right here. And there's more Connections on WRUR next.